COVID and cancer and crisis and chaos, to me, the theme that I hear today, that I hear in Zoom calls every day, that I read and listen, is that it gives us all clarity. What is important to me? What is life asking of me?
Hi, and welcome to the Leadership Now series with Nick Vujicic and Christine Grimm, Aria Consulting, 23 years of executive coaching, and I'm humbled that she is my coach. I could not lead without the sound coaching from Christine. I'm so glad, Chris, that we get to coach everyone watching. Tell us what we're going to be experiencing here on this series.
Yeah, we're going to coach you around leadership, around real challenges, how to navigate the challenges that you have right now, and how to feel good about it.
I'm so excited, Chris. You're going to be sharing with us also your pool of CEOs that can bring in and chime in some principles from their experience as well. Thank you for joining us here on the Leadership Now series. Here's today's episode.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Leadership Now series with Christine Grimm from Aria Consulting. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Nick. Glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here as well with this amazing special guest, Regina Ellis. Hello, Regina.
Hey, wonderful to be here, everybody.
I am so excited, Regina, to have you on this week's episode. Thank you for joining us. And hello to everyone joining all around the world, whether it's video or audio. We love you. If you're getting value from this, make sure that you're just passing it on to somebody who needs some encouragement. We're going to do an awesome three-way conversation here between Christine, Regina, and myself. If you're just tuning into this week's podcast for the very first time, welcome to the Nick Vujicic podcast, where we talk about leadership now. How do we, in a year of change and uncertainty and instability on many levels, how do we lead ourselves well, our families well, but especially our teams on a CEO level? We are, Christine, we are really unpackaging something we've not really even hinted at. This is a very different episode. Let's first of all introduce to the audience, if you don't mind, what are we going to deep dive into today? And then would love for you to introduce Regina to us all.
Great. Thank you. So as always, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you, Nick, for having me. And I have a very special privilege. Not only do I get to coach and work with amazing people, but when Nick and I started this, many people might know, if you've been following us, one of the things that we do is we invite other amazing leaders to join us in a conversation so we can get a true pulse of what's going on. Today's special because we thought we would venture out of what we've been doing away from for-profit leaders or corporate leaders and bring on someone who has done something which we believe not only is amazing, but also potentially inspirational. It's Regina Ellis here. If you think we look like sisters, we're not, but it feels like it sometimes, right, Regina? Regina is the founder and CEO of the Children's Cancer Association organization that I think I have known about now for, my gosh, I think 10 or 12 years. Regina, I can't even remember when we first met. They have an amazing mission. Regina founded this in a minute here. I'm going to let her tell the story because no one tells it like she does. But if you don't know CCA, you will by the end of this. And what I'm hoping to do is not only give Regina a chance here to tell you a little bit about herself and the org, but also for us to think about a different kind of leadership than we've talked about in the past, because both Nick and Regina, from my perspective, have done something that's not only extraordinary, but some of you might be considering doing, which is taking your passion, taking an idea, and bringing it forth in a way that serves other people and really makes an impact on the world. So I'm going to be quiet for a minute here and Regina, let you tell us more in your own way because it's so beautiful who you are and what you do. Yeah.
Thank you. Super honored to be here with Nick and Chris. You know, I consider myself a mom at the heart of all things. It's the best job that I've ever had in my life. And 28 years ago, my oldest daughter was diagnosed with cancer. And we entered an extraordinary new world with pediatric oncologists and began to become students of life and learn from Alexandra as she faced one of the biggest challenges of her life. What was remarkable about Alex is that she used joy to transform moments of pain and anxiety and stress. And we learned how to face cancer and then sadly the terminal phase of her cancer with joy, and saw the impact in our own lives, in the kids that were her friends, in the hospital, and the power of taking whatever time we have on this beautiful planet and making those moments extraordinary. Alex died in 1995, and I like to say that I had felt like I had taken the master class in life and death in almost 6 years of being Alexandra's mom. And I brought friends and family around a kitchen table, you know, being Italian, that's what we do. Amazing business leaders and kind of passion and perseverance to create an organization that would leverage joy to improve the mental and emotional health of young patients, kids facing cancer and other illnesses. To reduce stress, anxiety, perception of pain. And we began to create a one-of-a-kind organization called the Children's Cancer Association that would create joy-based programming in hospital free to kids wherever they were. And over the last 25 years, it is our 25th anniversary this year, we have had the privilege to serve over a million kids. We're in 22 children's hospitals, and in the next 5 years, we hope to deploy our programs so that they are accessible virtual bedside in a COVID world, right? And bedside in 250 children's hospitals. So it is a privilege to be here today to talk about leadership, about passion, and about leaving the world just a little bit more beautiful than we find it.
It's amazing, Regina. I know I've said it to you 1,000 times probably, but Nick, I don't know another way to describe what Regina and her team do. And I'll just kind of add, because that was a beautiful summary, Regina, but people can't really understand, I think, what you guys do until either A, God forbid, their child gets sick and they have to live it, or you go with you like I did to hospitals. we did a little tour at one point, and it was amazing to me, Nick, to see a glimpse into the world of a family when their child is sick, really sick, in the hospital, and understanding what Regina means when she says her team brings joy, right? That's not an easy thing to do, if you can imagine, when your child is having chemo and other treatments, you know, some of them more physically ill than others, the families under all kinds of duress and adversity in ways that most of us can't understand. And what happens when they bring specifically music in to create a very different vibration in the room, that when the kids light up and start to, engage in, which for me, I'm gonna cry talking about it, but was so unimaginable, talk about unimaginable, right? That here's this super duper sick child and they light up, right? With music or the ability to learn how to play the guitar or, to have this experience and what it does to them physically and emotionally, that I don't even know that adults can completely understand. I think that they can, but I don't know. I just don't want to lose that, because the unimaginable part to this for me was super real, Regina, when we started to engage. And it's not a shallow thing that you do, right? Mm.
Thank you. You know, it's important, and I'm sure Nick has experiences like this too. What we know is that kids need more than medicine to get better. And we use immune-enhancing elements of joy to deploy programs in music, friendship, and nature. And we see that as very important components to the healthcare environment. And our goal is to change the standard of care. So on the menu, when you walk into the hospital, whether your child has diabetes, has been in a car accident, fallen off of a horse, has cancer or a life-threatening condition, on the menu, beyond pharmaceutical and surgical intervention and the best care that we can offer, joy-based programs will be there as well. You can have an interaction of music during a chemotherapy or pre-surgical procedure. You can head out and get a kayak trip during the day to help you prepare for and enhance your immune system and your ability to combat disease and improve your wellness. So we hope to continue to provide access to kids across the nation in their greatest moment of need. But you know, why I'm here today with you all is to think about how we, one, deliver something to the world that we may not ever live to see the end of it, but we start kind of the tipping motion of making the world a better place for all of us. And I love that about Nick's story. It's why I said, oh my gosh, I'd love to pull up a chair and talk about leadership. CCA, we have a team of about 50, close to 2,000 volunteers that help deliver joy-based programming. And we partner with corporations, families, you know, churches, schools in communities like Austin, Boston, New York, and Portland, Oregon, which is our headquarters. And it makes a difference when people are connected to things that they feel passionate about and that they can help others. And no more than this moment of COVID, that we see people singing from balconies in Italy, and it's touching our own families, right? When we have artists and celebrities and moms and dads and brothers and sisters, you know, on social apps sharing joy. It is a time that I think people are thinking about what is it that they want to do with their beautiful life? Yeah.
It's amazing. First of all, for anyone watching or listening, Regina, what's your website?
It's joyrx.org.
Good. We'll make sure that the link's down below. I am so humbled. You can tell my demeanor and my voice is very different, Chris, compared to any other episode. It's because it's humbling. I mean, first of all, I'm humbled at the fact that your daughter, you said, was that her coping mechanism wasn't an attitude of gratitude as much as any other principle, but joy. I mean, that to me is unimaginable. When I'm on the floor and I'm the motivational speaker and I can't peel myself off that floor, the last thing that I could think of is, well, how does joy get into my system? Now, I have my own coping mechanisms and things that I, you know, help me to get through. But how unimaginable, first that flip, and then using that, though, for someone else. Mm-hmm. First of all, congratulations. And we're so honored to have you on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many people who just believe that things just happen. And I'm sure you're a person who says things do happen, but there could be a greater purpose behind that as well. For me, I just, it was actually 3 weeks ago, I did a speaking engagement in front of 25 people, very accomplished CEOs. And a couple came forward and they were crying because they lost their girl. I think she was 6 years old or 7 years old to cancer. And they're like, we know it's no luck, chance or coincidence. We know that there could be a greater purpose. And we feel that maybe we should start a nonprofit. They're not the only ones that told me that. And I want to know what you think. What would the first thing coming out of Regina's mouth come out? But I also want to preface what I told them. And I want to see what you would say to what I said to them. I'm like, first of all, don't give unnecessary timelines in how much time should pass before you feel XYZ. And maybe some people are positioned and convicted and ordained to start a nonprofit. Some are not. Some are to support a similar nonprofit. Someone who's dealing with all those emotions, who is convicted, Regina, who wants to do something with that pain. Can you talk to us about how that process happened for you? If that's okay, Chris, if we go down that way first, because I'd love to know how did this even come about and when and all those, however which way you want to take it. But I'm just thinking of all these people who go through pain. Maybe it's not looking like your pain or my pain or Chris's pain, but what do sometimes people have to really understand and come to an awareness of?
Well, I think kind of your wisdom about how we think about starting a business, whether that's a for-profit, you're creating a service or a widget, or you have an innovation that you want to deliver to the world, or you're thinking about social innovation or mission impact, and you are helping deliver a solution or a social service to the world that may or may not exist. It is important to remember that there's probably, I think the number is about 1.6 million nonprofit organizations in the United States, right? They make up about 5% of our GDP. They help connect to over $1 trillion of revenue and drive employment and all sorts of economic positive attributes to our community. So they're a big part of our business of for-profit and not-for-profit. But it is important to think about if you are, maybe you think about a way that you've been impacted. It could be that you, like me, you've had a family member with cancer or another life-threatening illness, or you've been through divorce, or you've been through immigration, or you have adopted a child, or you're interested in leadership in diverse communities and want to create a not-for-profit organization. It is a rigorous, business endeavor. There is a lot of accounting and recording and delivering a very thoughtful service to the community. With taxes and salaries and benefits and all of those things that are a part of that. And that may or may not be something people are interested in doing. They may be interested in partnering with other organizations that exist. So maybe you weigh, do you have the energy, like you said? Is this something that you feel incredibly passionate about, and do you want to create a business? And those are things that people should really research before they start moving in that direction. And there's lots of resources on the web.
That's really wise, Regina, because I do think right now in particular, and I know this will be on the internet for a long time, but it is the end of July of 2020. It's been quite a year. Who knows what comes next? I do believe, to your point, both of your points, right, that two things, that there are people who have a stirring inside that has either been through their own standing up to the unimaginable because of what has been happening, or they're watching other people suffer, whatever that means. For those who are watching this and don't know what I mean by that, here in the US, we've not only had the pandemic locking us down and impacting, you know, all parts of our lives and businesses, but also social unrest that is hitting people in a very deep way. I should probably say finally, there are issues that have been boiling in this country for a very long time and around the world. Now they are with us in conversation. And because of that, like I said, you know, this is a very different time for many people. And so whether they have been directly impacted by COVID or economically, whatever it is, or racism, sexism, et cetera, you know, there are a lot of people whose hearts are being stirred. And when I say that, I mean, I can't tell you how many people are not just talking about starting a nonprofit. So to your point, Regina, just being wise about knowing what you're being called to do, but also people who, they just want to do good, right? They just want to solve a problem. They just want to do something great. And I was, one of the reasons I wanted to get the two of you together is I, you know, wanted to talk about that, right? Is, you know, that there is the business piece, Regina, which I think is very wise in understanding you don't just start a nonprofit and then, you know, get so swept up by the good you want to do and not forget that there's a lot of responsibility and structure that both of these people know have to go with that. You know, but let's talk about what people do when they have all of a sudden this deep calling to, you know, make a big impact. Because I think Nick's question was a good one, Regina. You know, when did you know? What did it take for you to know that it wasn't just an idea, that you were going to do something? You had to do something.
Well, philanthropy was something that my family, even myself as a young child, were very involved in. We had values of showing up for our community and giving back. So that wasn't a foreign kind of modality of how to be a community member. But what I found is when we were in the hospital, there were so many families. I mean, cancer is the leading cause of death by disease in the U.S. There are a lot of kids that are in hospital for all sorts of reasons. And we found that the need was so great that kids needed more than medicine. And when Alex died in May, May 7th, 1995, we just really brought people together and thought, maybe we can share and begin some joy-based programming and music and nature and friendship and see where that goes. And so we, you know, I worked through, you know, the Justice Department in the state of Oregon and learned about kind of the business application in terms of creating a nonprofit entity and the kind of revenue expense side and running a business and the charitable expectations of a board of directors and, you know, the different dimensions of running a business. And we journeyed into that pretty quickly because for me, the purpose and the way to live in this world after my daughter died was a great desire to give back and live the lessons learned that Alex taught our family. And I wanted to rally the people that rallied around our family and leverage that good. And looking back 25 years later at an organization that now has raised over $80 million and delivered 79 cents of every one of those dollars back into free programming to children in hospitals, it's extraordinary that one idea and passionate people and family and community, when something is simple, it takes flight. And whether that's social justice or food scarcity or farming, like we were talking about earlier, it's like Nick, sharing what they know, sharing passion and ideas and inspiration of how people survive very difficult things. Those are the things that I believe are the most important commodity that we have to share. It is our currency of being human beings, is sharing inspiration and passion and purpose and making it better for people.
Mm. You know, as I've traveled many, many countries and met many people, I found out that over 50, 60% of all the nonprofits that are birthed from somebody who's been affected within that vertical of that nonprofit organizational activity. Did you start whiteboarding? Did you journal? Who did you first tell about your dream?
Well, Nick, I'm old, and that was 25 years ago. as I remember it, that's right. I think I had an abacus and maps and something. I'm not sure.
When you were 15, 25 years ago,
she was very young.
Yeah, I was 30 when Alex died, and when I really started putting up the tent stakes of Children's Cancer Association to change the standard of care in pediatric healthcare, I think those are exactly the types of activities that I coach and talk with people every month who call me and say, I'm interested in this. Where do I go? How do I start? And I think the first place you start is you stand in front of a mirror and you say, am I ready to start a business? If I am, do I have something for the world that is new? Or should I be partnering with somebody to do that work? And if that's true, grab a piece of paper, write your life mission statement down, and then figure out three people that might help you sort and create a framework for this business and this opportunity. And then go out and look at resources like the National Council of Nonprofits or your charitable Department of Justice within your state to learn how you create a nonprofit. And people journal about it, right? Or they put up paper, in their bathroom, in their mirror, what they see every day, and mm-hmm. they create one thing that they're gonna do, right? So whether you're an innovator and creating a widget or you're thinking about a social innovation, that is the way that we start businesses that have powerful impact.
So, sorry, I've got to ask you a question. So I know first of all, for everyone listening or watching, we want you all to know this, that life sucks. And to see though people turn tragedy into triumph mm-hmm. is inspiration. And it brings in hope. It's not motivation. It's inspiration that brings hope. And hope is the greatest thing that any human being can really have. Real hope. And so for all of us to understand that when someone does instigate it and they take their first steps, by the way, to all our followers, you'll find out really quickly, the majority of the time we are surrounded in our families with the most intelligent people on planet Earth, because normally when you share your dreams and your goals, they'll give you a million reasons why it's not going to happen and why you're going to fail. But when we say impact, big impact, all we know is that if we can just make a real, true, significant, and genuine impact in one person's life, that all of a sudden becomes a drug. For me, it's become a drug. It's a drug for me that everything else kind of seems obsolete. When you look that person in the eye, Regina, when you administered the first activity of giving joy to someone in honor and on behalf of your daughter and your family and those people supporting you. For me, anytime I did something like write a book or a short film or a YouTube video that we deliberately uploaded, I always wait for the person to come up to me and say, I read your book, I saw that film and I saw that video and it changed my life, or it saved my life, or I was just about to commit suicide and I wrote out a letter as to why I was giving up that night, but then your video came up. I always wait for that one. How was it for that first one for you, Regina, where all this work, all this sacrifice, all these dreams, and all of a sudden it goes from thought, vision, and now here it is. How could you describe that for you?
Well, I think the human condition is hard for every single person. Everyone listening, you look to your left, you look to your right, you look at the people that you love in your home, you look at your neighbors. It's hard work, and there are hard days and hard moments and challenges that face all of us, right? I consider myself just the luckiest person in the world to have a family that certainly believes in my dreams and calls my crap and celebrates and cheers me on, right? All of those things. And I have friends like that, and I have business partners like that, and I work with a team that's like that, right? And that's how we get stronger and better, and we learn and we listen and become more valuable leaders. And help people reach their best and develop our capabilities. I am always inspired by the gift to share joy, whether that's through networks with new hospitals, whether that's bringing teens together and they're helping us from their own experiences with cancer or cardiac surgery or diabetes, think about programs that are meaningful to them, or that we're at the bedside of a five-year-old who is terminally ill, and they are creating a song for their brother and sister and singing with their grandparents, and we're taping that for them, right? There are beautiful moments every single day that CCA leads with volunteers, with specialists and trained staff at the bedside of kids that I am in awe of, and feel like it is a privilege to be a part of that care team. But I also sit back and hear what you do and watch on, you know, the telly about people in social justice and standing on the front lines and helping people who are unemployed in this moment, or leading and helping companies get through the storm of COVID and this pandemic and economic recession that we're in, and I am equally inspired.
I just want to say that one of the things that stands out for me that the two of you have in common, and I know you don't know each other well enough to really know this, but I'm sure that you'll get it, is that, well, first of all, both of you have been around for a long time living this purpose. You have both weathered as a coach and as a partner and, you know, as a supporter for both of you. I've seen the ups and downs. And I think that's an important part of this, right? Sustainable impact, right? Taking your vision it gets tested, right? I guess is one of the ways I look at it. And maybe the two of you might speak about it differently, but I want you to talk about that. Like, when your purpose is questioned, right? When you come up with the next version of unimaginable, maybe it's COVID, frankly. I know that the both of you are being challenged with your teams right now. And I have the privilege of being in some of those conversations with both your teams around, you know, holy crap, our whole delivery method for both of you has kind of been upended, right? But you're not giving up. There's no giving up, right? Like, so talk about that a little bit. Like, when you know it's sustainable and you're going to do it at all costs, because some people would give up. Some people are maybe on the verge of giving up. So I'm hoping that if any of those people are listening, the two of you maybe sharing through kind of, you know, when the next unimaginable shows up, you know, how do you keep yourself able to pull that purpose through to the next level, to the next version? Yeah.
Regina, you want to go? You want me to go first?
What's your preference?
I want to hear from you first, if that's cool.
Sure. You know, watching kids face cancer, There is nothing in my life that I cannot endure and persevere. So watching others go through extraordinary challenges allows me to see my own capabilities and my own strength. And so I believe in my ability to get through very dark times. It doesn't mean that they're easy. It doesn't mean that things don't go dark or that I don't get low or that I don't question my own abilities, my own leadership. But I know that I can journey through, and I've proven that to myself in 5 decades. So there's that. And I think that when we are fallible and we are learners and we reach out to others and we develop our own leadership and voice and purpose, it helps us in times like this, right? And I bet everybody who's listening has that same experience. They've been through life for a while, right? Whether that's whatever business dynamic that is, or you know, whatever journey they're on, they've reached a really difficult threshold in their life. Your question about the challenges that organizations are facing, you know, for CCA, I kind of think about this moment that we have twin objectives, and that is service and survival. We have rapidly adapted our services in children's hospitals from bedside in, you know, communities across the nation to virtual bedside, where children can access that via our digital programs like our musicrx.org or through Facebook and other social platforms that we deliver experiences for kids, or the hospital networks when they go in hospital on their TV. And we also, Nick, we've talked about, you know, event-driven organizations like ours, right? We have 130 events a year, right? We raise over $7 million from being in front of people, from letting them access music and kind of sharing joy with people. Now we do that in a virtual environment, right? And we're adapting and learning how to connect with people. Nonprofit organizations raise funds and deliver programs through contributions, whether that's individual, a foundation, and corporations. So we are evolving in this time, and CCA has the heart of our mission in everything we do, and that is in service delivery to children with life-threatening illness, and it also is in survival, how we will adapt and evolve. And these are hard times for all of us.
Well, first of all, we're gonna give everyone that website again. Go to say it one more time, Regina.
Yeah. If there's if you need services, or there's a family we can help, if you're interested in volunteering, or you want to share your joy or a contribution, you can go to joyrx.org to learn more.
Wonderful. Yeah, look, we Chris, as you know, everything's gone virtual for us. And since I started 20 years ago as a first speech as a 17-year-old, there has been no 6 months of Nick's life where he's only spoken twice in 6 months. We just had that 6 months. Literally, what's the coolest thing about this beautiful new season for us is that I was fishing literally 3 hours ago. And here I am, and I look good. My hair looks good. And I'm able to, you know, reach the world for a longer time through virtual settings. And so our nonprofit, we're gearing up for Life Without Limbs, where we talk about the spiritual side of life, where I share about how my faith walk with God has helped me to overcome depression, attempted suicide. And so what we've done now is we're going monthly virtually, and I think the traction that we're going to get within 6 months is going to be proof of concept to the point where we're going to go in that trajectory. It's actually going to help us accomplish the 10-year goal quicker than we thought, if we do it right. The team's doing awesome. We're so glad. But it's been a very challenging year. Not afraid to transparently say that it was hard. I mean, our purpose and value, when that's kind of taken away, as far as the doing of it, and then realizing you need a time to realize that you're not a human doing, you're a human being and just being, especially when you're a Tasmanian devil, and you just go and go and go and go and you never stop. I would say to anybody who's struggling right now, who feels like giving up or thinking of giving up, to give yourself, first of all, time. I think a lot of us who took a break off that freight train that they were on realize now how burnt out and stretched we were and distracted from the most important things or the most dearest things to our hearts and what fills us up with our soul. And it's not because of a lack of anything. It's because it was going well and it was good and it was great and it's awesome and we keep on going. And now we were forced to reset and now see, okay, what does this now look like? So it took time. It took friends checking in on me, me checking in on friends, which in the way it actually blessed me when I'm checking in on somebody else just to hear someone else's voice. I'm blessed with an incredibly encouraging team, but it's been an interesting 6 months for sure, 7 months. But if anybody is out there and feeling like giving up, know that your tragedy can also be turned into triumph. I want to give a plug to a short film that won the first Clint Eastwood Short Film Award ever in his life. It's called The Butterfly Circus. If you look that up on YouTube, Butterfly Circus. It's a 22-minute version. Look at it. And we got so many emails, messages, and all that stuff. Tens of millions of people watched it. And won 32 film festivals awards. Incredible. And I happened to meet a teenager who was in ICU because she slashed her wrists. Her dad saved her life, took her to the hospital just in time. And then in her recovery, there was a video that inspired her, The Butterfly Circus. Hmm. And there was a line that said, the greater the struggle, the more glorious the triumph. The greater the struggle, the more glorious the triumph. And she watched that and she said, that's it. I'm never going to give up. You allowing a million, you said, people experiencing that joy. Some people just need that spark. Some people just need that affirmation. Some people, when you're talking about hope, it's sometimes even something that they've been told by someone else, but it takes someone else outside that sphere of influence that they're surrounded with for someone to say, hey, you're beautiful. You're not an accident. We love you. Why? Well, we just love you. Why? And sharing that joy is awesome. So I got to meet that girl and she actually got a copper engraved wristband with that one sentence.
Oh, with the quote. That's great.
With the quote, which is so That's cool. Beautiful. And so if anyone out there who's looking for inspiration, please go to Regina's website and get plugged in. I can't say it enough. I've been saying it since I was 24. So whatever, 13 years. When you don't get a miracle, be one.
Hmm. That's really beautiful.
Beautiful. And I love how you though give a platform and you give the planet, right, a chance to say, hey, your life sucks maybe right now, but don't give up. And as a motivational speaker on the psychological level, you still have the attitude of gratitude. You can talk to someone, get a psychologist and get through that. You will get through that. Friends, family, faith, But the third thing to get out of depression, what I always say, and I've spoken to 9 million people face-to-face, 1.8 billion people on TV, is go and do something. Go and serve someone. Because I feel what we all really deep down want is love. And that love of that affirmation where you have value, where if you don't have self-love in the healthy way, and if you don't have, you haven't, there's my quotation marks, you haven't identified your own purpose. When you have those voices in your head, right? Voices in your head saying, you're never going to get through this, you're nothing, you're worthless. Then you help someone and you see that smile and you see that change. You then tell all those stupid voices saying, no, you're wrong. Because look what just happened. I helped that person. And so getting out there, I think that's all also the interesting thing, Christine, about the unimaginable. It's like you're waiting for a boat to come and now someone's telling you, yeah, just go send a boat for someone else. No, I want that boat. Mm. And that's the beauty of life.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the opportunity we've been given. I know on some of the other podcasts we've talked about this, but I think with two of you, it's a very special conversation to me, a little bit different than before. I don't want to take away from anybody's efforts, because I do believe what I am seeing, and I think you both are seeing it too, that more and more people, specifically I'm seeing people who have been sent home from work, right? And working from home for some people is more busy than it was at their office. For me, it's definitely that. But I've talked to other people who that's not the case. And so they've had the time and energy to spend their time doing things that they haven't done before. And that feels great, right? And I think that this is this opportunity that we have. If you haven't thought that, I guess I'm speaking to everybody out there, as my voice tells me not to talk anymore. I should say, hold on one second. Mm-hmm. But I think the opportunity is pay attention to what your heart is telling you. It doesn't have to be grand. You don't have to start a nonprofit to do something great right now. I wanna just highlight that. We are all standing up against the unimaginable. Everything's unfamiliar, if you haven't noticed that yet, whether it's wearing a mask when you go out, or it's something much more serious, like the businesses and your teams who are having to really think about the delivery of your what you're doing, how you're going to make money, etc. You know, there's a whole continuum of what unimaginable means. But I want to come back to the core thing here, which is whatever that means for every person listening and watching, you can stand in that. You can stand against it, right? That's what the two of you, to me, are the example of people who have done that, right? Continually standing up against unimaginable. And then think about whatever effort you can take, right? It can be small. It can be big. You don't have to solve the biggest problem. And that's something that I think has been woven through the last hour to me as we're talking about this, which is, you know, Nick, you had to actually listen to, I think it was the janitor at your high school, and do the first speech, right? You didn't start with a goal to touch, you know, convert a billion souls, or your goals always seem to get bigger, so I don't even know what the numbers are anymore, but the first time had to be the first time, right? And like you were saying, Regina had to do it the first time. Like, it had to start delivering Joy RX in whatever way that was 25 years ago. I know it's different than what your team does today. Maybe it has the essence of it, but the delivery looks and feels different. You know, so I do think it's important that we ground people in, you know, how do they take the first step, no matter how big or small that might be. And Nick, I think it's worth maybe you even sharing that. What actually did allow you? Who did you speak to first? What was your first thing?
So it was the janitor at my high school who looked at me and he said, "Didn't you just get voted in on a student government board?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "And you're a Christian?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, why aren't you then at the Christian club on Friday lunches?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know what to say to that." I'm like, I I haven't gone. I'd like to go one day. Lied. Like to go one day. He said, Nick, I want you to come and I want you to share your story. I said, excuse me? I said, no, thank you. And so public speaking, even though I enjoyed it, I never thought that I would share my story. And yeah, he put me in front of six students. One cried and I'm like, why are you crying? I'm thinking, what's going on? They asked me for my number. They, you know, got different invitations for me to speak. And at that time, I was in options trading, stock market. I'm just about to get my first real estate investment property at 19. All that, those years, I was really focused on becoming financially independent because my dad said, look, you got to be a millionaire plus because you need caregivers to help you. And deep down, he never thought that I'd get married. He never told me that till I got married. And so he drilled into me that I've got to get employees to be my hands and feet. And so in that, I never thought to be a speaker. And in 02, when I was 19, there was no such thing as YouTube. I mean, I didn't even, if it was existing, I didn't know about it. And I graduated high school in 2000 and I started speaking. And my mom and dad said, don't ever be a speaker. That's a stupid idea. Do you know a speaker? Do you have any invitations? How are you going to get invitations? How are you going to get there? Are they going to pay you? All these kinds of good questions. And I didn't have answers to, but I knew in my heart that when I saw someone cry, I even though I don't know why they're crying, I relate to when I felt desperate. And when I tried to end my life, when the girl came up to me on the 12th speech, she said, thank you. No one's ever told me that they love me. No one's ever told me that I'm beautiful the way that I am. I was in shock because if my parents didn't tell me that I was beautiful and that they loved me every day, I wouldn't be here. Or if they didn't make me feel that way every day, I wouldn't be here. I would have gone through with the suicide. So I'm thinking, man, how many more lives are there out there that's never been told that they're loved, that's never been told that they're beautiful the way that they are? So that's when I told my parents, I don't care. I'm going to be a speaker. And if you want me to finish school, great. I'll finish school. And I'm going straight into speaking, which they allowed and blessed me with. So it was a big thing where it was being forced into opportunities and me not even knocking doors until I knew that I was supposed to be a speaker. So I was starting to enjoy it by the 10th, 11th, and 12th speech. And I was terrible. Oh my God, I was terrible. Absolutely terrible. But I was just genuine. And I think that's what spoke the most. And even when I knew that I was supposed to be a speaker and I wanted to learn about speaking, I didn't listen to anybody else or their speeches because I didn't want to take content. So I just wanted to stay true to myself, true to my calling, and take opportunities where they could. But then when, man, that girl hugged me and cried, I'm like, man, I'm calling schools. So I called 53 schools, and one said yes, and then the rest is history. Yeah, it's That's been beautiful. Amazing, amazing. Mm-hmm. 74 countries and, you know, anti-bullying campaigns, you know, governments having me to bring in special needs integration into their society. Still, there are dozens of countries that have tribal beliefs that if the baby is born with a cleft lip, you need to bury that child alive. There are countries around the world that are just changing their laws that if you're LGBTQ, that you go to jail for that. That's not right. That's not fair. Muslim, Christian, Jew, you know, we all have value. Autistic, Down syndrome. Iceland just gave a national press conference in 2017 or 2016, if I'm not mistaken. They proudly said to their whole country, Iceland, we're so thankful we eradicated the disease of Down syndrome. So they just aborted every single child and then waited for the last one to die and then basically said, yeah, we eradicated Down syndrome from our country. this is in the 2000s, baby. This is with 2 billion people going hungry, plus all this, Regina, right? You know this. You know the global scale of things. I want to ask you a question because this is so important. Because I've been having to deal with this myself. When you have children who are young or not young, and you know what's going on in the world, you've seen death, you've seen mourning, you've seen loss, and you've seen the need in the world. How do you not go down that dark alley where you're like, I'm never going to change the world, but I'm content with doing what I can do? Because some entrepreneurial spirited people who are trying to make a difference, who even have big goals, there are times where goals change. There are times where you realize you can't meet some goals. How do you keep a balanced, healthy mindset when you know that this is awesome what we've done, and this is what I think our mission's going to be the same, our methodology is changing right now because of 2020, but how do you, deep down, do you sometimes have those thoughts when you're alone? I wish we could do more. How do you get yourself out of that?
I think as a parent, something that I prompt to my kids is, what is life asking of you, right? And what is life asking of you? And how it is that you show up for yourself in the world? And what does that look like day one, day five, day 25, right? Day 5,000 that you are in this world. And I think those small incremental moments that we build upon give us hope internally. They help us forge through, walk through really difficult times like right now, you know, COVID and cancer and crisis and chaos. To me, the theme that I hear today, that I hear in Zoom calls every day, that I read and listen, is that it gives us all clarity. What is important to me? What is life asking of me? And I think that is how we show up for our life. And whether that is creating a mission impact organization and creating a new way to build a business and make change, or whether it's how you show up for your team, or maybe you're an essential worker, and it is the types of impacts that you're leaving and sharing with people. We all help each other get through this thing called life, right? If you can't be a miracle, be one. And sometimes that's just a moment of joy that you're sharing with somebody, right? That's smiling at somebody. Even with your mask on, they can see the crinkle of your eye, right? That is, to your point, saying, I see you, you matter, you are valuable to me, whether that's in our workplace, it's in a Zoom call, it's in hospitals, it's in our neighborhood, and very importantly, it's in our homes. It is, what is this life asking of me? And really following that truth. And I think at the end of the day, you know, that's how we face the unimaginable. There will be more unimaginable moments in our beautiful lifetimes. And hopefully some of them are extraordinary, right? And some of them will be dark and hard. But I guess that's what I think about when I think that the weight of the world feels heavy. And it is in the moments that build that we can help ourselves and each other through.
You're such a beautiful soul, Regina.
The two of you are really superheroes. I know we have to bring this to a close, but I just want to tell you that the privilege I have is 23 years of coaching, what does it get me? It lets me walk with people like the two of you. As you live your purpose and through the ups and downs and seeing how resilient you are, knowing that the two of you take for granted how amazing you are. Like just listening to the two of you talk, I'm like, yeah, Nick was surprised when the girl cried the first time he spoke to the six people. Like, really? I'm like, oh, the two of you like take so much for granted. And I'll just say this one last thing, just so our listeners know, like every time I've ever walked into Regina's office, every time, no matter what was going on, she lives joy, right? Like everything she said, she lives. And Nick, every time I walk into your office or home and we spend time together, regardless of what's going on, you are able to reframe, reboot, get it done. You know, I always say that to you. I'm like, you know, other people, one day, Regina, he listed things that were going wrong and he didn't mention no arms and no legs. And I just pointed out to him that some people might actually put those things on the list. Just saying. So I just have to say, and I don't know, Nick, if you want to just say some things before we close it up, because this has been so amazing. And I know the value is going to be great for people. There's so much goodness here. But thank you both, for doing this. And, there's more than one person that's going to benefit from this. I know for sure.
You know, I don't even know if it's such a question or a comment, but I had a thought today while I was fishing. I wonder what Gen Z, with the struggles that they have, and the, think of like, how can I say it? The peer leaders of high schools and middle schoolers who will know within a year of the mental health percentage rise in pornographic addictions, sexual abuse, the list goes on from the tragedies of all of this going on, addictions, depression, anxiety, fear. I wonder what those who want to lead with will lead. I kind of just want to make a message to all the Gen Zs out there. Like, get off your stupid social media. You know, like freaking do something with it. Like I haven't heard of, I'm crying.
I noticed. I was like, you're crying right now.
I haven't heard yet of a viral, youth-led nothing.
Oh, that it's happening. It's happening. But they don't speak the same language as us, Nick. I have a 17-year-old. Like,
maybe I got to get on TikTok.
Yes, it's on TikTok. It is on TikTok.
Because I ain't heard anything. I haven't really gone on TikTok yet. I mean, I've done a couple things. But I was like, I'm like sad and angry at the same time, yet excited. Because I think we're going to see Gen Z bring to the table a level of power that is needed for our world.
Should get on TikTok because I think it's happening there. TikTok.
Good. Well, then everyone, if you're not on TikTok, apparently we need to go check that out. But you know, like I'm excited to see what's going to happen from this. You know, I really, really am. And the world's never felt so small. And the problems have never felt so real.
And big. Yeah.
So, sorry I got emotional, but I'm excited. And we'll see what Gen Z brings.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. I guess you have to close us down, unfortunately. But
So, tell all the Gen Zs on TikTok, Chris, since you're on it. Tell them. Go see
I'll put out your challenge. I'll make sure that the Nick Vujicic challenge goes into the right platform.
Maybe I'll make sure that we do some viral on TikTok or something. Regina, you are so inspiring. I watched a film about human trafficking, and it is so hard to watch. Watched it with my wife, and I thought to myself, I can't imagine ever burying my child, or having my child kidnapped, or seeing my child go through cancer. I don't know how I would cope. And I just want you to know, for you to even have the vulnerability over these years to put that there, and now share your story. I am so inspired by you, and I love you, and I'm proud of you, and God bless you and everything you do, as you continue to share joy all around the world. We love you.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah. It is, for me, remarkable to imagine a life without arms and legs. And as you said, when you think about all the things that human beings face that are hard, right, that life does suck for everybody, it is where we can find hope and inspiration and share small moments of compassion and love and joy that pulls us all through. So thank you for allowing me into Leadership Now with you and Chris, and having inspiration that I didn't have prior. You both are such remarkable leaders and kind people and generous community leaders that I thank you for being what's beautiful in the world. So thank you.
Love you. Love you, Chris.
Love you back, both of you.
Bye, everyone.
Have a great day.
You join us next week on the Leadership Now series with Christine and Nick. Love you. Bye-bye.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.